Minnesota Beer Cast Free House Fall Flavors Beer Dinner Edition. I have been looking forward to this night for a very long time. This is the part where you talk.
Oh, I thought you were going to introduce me.
This is my co-host Schmitty.
Hi.
I like know who you are.
What's happening? I have also been looking forward to this. We are at the Freehouse. We're having the Fall Flavors Dinner. We're going to be eating, drinking. We're going to be talking to the brewers. We'll probably be BSing about some news. We have some guests stop by. I might talk to a few other diners. It's going to be a very casual show, which is kind of how we do these things.
Yeah, these are my favorite shows. We've done a few of these now, these beer dinner shows. I love talking food and beer pairings. I love talking to chefs and picking their brain about, you know, what flavors they found in the beer that they and why they chose the dish that they chose to pair with the beer. I find those conversations to be fascinating. So we will be doing a segment with the chef who put this menu together a little later in the show. And like Schmitty said, we're going to talk to the brewers. This menu looks pretty great. I just got it sent to me yesterday. So we've already had our welcome beer. Our welcome beer was their Freehouse number 46, their Wet Hop IPA.
Yep.
We had this on the show a few weeks ago, right?
Yep. So yeah. This is made with the hops with the boys from Mighty Axe.
Yeah, all Centennial hops, like thousands of pounds. Thousands and thousands of pounds.
It might be a few tons.
It could be. I think they got all the Centennial hops that exist. It was a really fantastic beer. It's a taste. I already housed mine.
I need a
second welcome.
you need to be welcomed again.
I need to be welcomed again.
No,
it's a really, really tasty beer.
Yeah, it's.
You see Wet Hop IPA, and I imagine, you know, most people would see that and they'd be like, oh, it's going to be super hoppy. It really wasn't like in your face, punch you in the mouth kind of hoppy. It was very, very nice.
Yeah, those fresh wet hops give you more, in my opinion, a more round. I don't know if round is the best descriptor, but
I think that works.
A whole hop component flavor where you get not just that concentrated extract dried hop experience. You get the entire plant that's in there, not the plant, but the cone.
Yeah, you almost even get a bit of that oily texture. I don't want to. That sounds unappealing, but
you're off.
Well, there's a texture difference, and I'm trying to find the right way to describe
texture
it.
Would maybe describe the mouthfeel more than the roundness, but I don't know. We'll find a better way to describe it. Maybe we'll ask the brewers when they come over.
I think they'll do a much better job than I just did.
Yeah.
So looking forward, we're going to start with I'm going to run through the menu here real quick because I'm pretty excited. The course one is a Reuben soup, a nice hearty fall soup with corned beef, sauerkraut, rytons, which I'm assuming are rye croutons.
Yeah, I would assume.
That's going to be paired with the English brown ale. The brew bread bruschetta is course two.
Well, you skipped over the fact that it's being paired with the English brown ale.
That's what I said.
But it's also the GABF bronze medal winning.
You're right. I
English
did
brown
that.
Ale.
That was.
Just want to throw that in there.
That was bad hosting on my part.
Just saying.
The award winning English brown ale. The number three beer, if you come here and you want to try it. Brew bread bruschetta for course two. That sounds delicious. That's going to be paired with the blueberry blonde ale, which is one of their more popular beers here.
This should be interesting. That would not have been my first inclination.
It's an interesting pairing.
Yeah, would not. I'm interested to try that because the blueberry blonde would not have been where I would have gone with that, but some it's got that balsamic reduction, and some of those can be very fruity.
It could be sweet on sweet,
so
which works. That's one of the strategies that we hear about from the chefs when we talk to them. You can either try to find conflicting pairings that that accentuate each other, or you can try to match those pairings. Balsamic is sweet. Blueberry blonde obviously going to be sweet, so I'm guessing he you know, and we'll talk to him, but I'm guessing he noticed something, a flavor in the beer that he thought with the balsamic would complement nicely.
And course three is going to be the Bangers and Purple Mash. It's a Ukrainian smoked pork sausage, tri mustard cream, and Peruvian mash.
I don't know what Peruvian mash is.
I'm guessing it's the some sort of Peruvian purple potato.
I'm guessing that as well.
That's been mashed.
I mean, you can't go wrong with sausage, right?
Well, yeah.
Smoked sausage paired with some potatoes. That's.
Have you ever had Ukrainian sausage before?
I don't know.
We are not very far from Kramarchuk's. Just over the Hennepin Bridge. If you've never been to Kramarchuk's, and I would beg you, dear listener, as well, if you've never been to Kramarchuk's,
yeah, you haven't been living life right. If
go,
you haven't been
go
to
get yourself some Ukrainian sausages. They have it fresh, and they've also got the smoked Ukrainian sausage. Go get some. Go there for brunch or lunch. Get yourself the sandwich at the deli.
They have pierogies there too.
Then go bring home some smoked Ukrainian sausage because it's delightful.
That's going to be paired with their Oktoberfest.
Yep.
That just looks like a really classic fall dish right there all around.
Sausage and Oktoberfest. I could have done that one.
Yeah. That just sounds amazing. And then the final course, the dessert course, you've got a pumpkin cheesecake, brown sugar graham crust, brown ale infused caramel. And that's going to be paired with the barley wine, the GABF Silver Medal Award winner from 2017.
There you go.
Nothing wrong with that.
Right?
Nothing wrong with that pairing at all that I can see on its surface.
Yeah, I do love my cheesecake with the graham cracker crust.
That's essential,
crust.
Right?
Yeah.
That is essential. So our first course is arriving. I am eager to dive in. So before we go to break here, I do want to remind you we've got the... We're still planning our chili cook-off.
Yeah, what are we planning that for? Is that going to be, what are we looking for, like midwinter, like just something?
I was thinking we should do it before Thanksgiving.
Before Thanksgiving?
We should do it before Thanksgiving.
Why?
I don't know.
Oh, just so we can be as rushed as possible?
Because I want to do it soon. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, let's do it like when things are really cold and we need to be really warm.
As you can see, when I say we're still planning, we are just beginning planning. we've gotten as far as we want to do it. That's the extent to which we've gotten.
It's like less than a month away if we want to do it before. Oops. Oh, okay. Let's have some soup and figure this out between segments.
If you are a part of a brewery and you want to take part in the chili cook-off, please feel free to hit us up. Contact information at MinnesotaBeerCast.com, or you can message us through Facebook or through Twitter, whatever works best for you. Hit up our social media and let us know. We would love to broaden the participant base, even though, I mean, you're going to lose.
So we can talk about this more later.
I'm going to be cooking
I'm done with
my
soup,
chili.
But I've entered already a few warm-up contests this year.
Yeah?
So I'm sharpening my... my chili game.
It needs sharpening.
You son of a...
Because last year it was pretty dull. All right, let's take our first break. Schmitty's very angry with me now. Hopefully this soup will warm his cockles and he'll be in a better mood when we come back. You're listening to the Minnesota Beercast live from Freehouse and sponsored by our good friends at Freehouse Beer. Check out all the great Blue Plate restaurants and enjoy their fantastic beers. We'll be right back after housing this soup.
Stephanie Schimpf from Blue Plate Restaurants is here.
Hey, Rosie. You know, we may be all about the blue, but we sure love the purple. Skol.
Game days downtown are awesome, especially at Mercury.
Stop by and check out our game day pregame specials.
Food specials, Freehouse taps, and more.
Come pregame the purple at Mercury Dining Room and Rail every Sunday before home games.
Only blocks away from the stadium at 5th and Marquette in downtown Minneapolis or online at mercurympls.com.
All right, welcome back to the Minnesota Beercast Freehouse Fall Flavors Beer Dinner Edition. We are a couple courses in to the Fall Flavors Dinner. We had the Reuben soup. We talked about the menu last segment.
Yeah.
Had the Reuben soup course paired with the award-winning English brown ale. And we are sort of midway through course two, this bruschetta. I got to say, if this keeps up, man, this is a five-star dinner right here. This is very
It's good to hear. Good to hear.
We are joined by a couple of the brewers here from the Free House. Why don't you gentlemen introduce yourselves?
My name is Brian Kuhn. I'm one of the assistant brewers here.
And my name is Tim Mattson. I'm the other assistant brewer at the Free House.
So, Brian, Tim, what consists of your typical duties here as an assistant brewer, other than getting to hang out with us, crack-wise, and be hosts here for the beer dinner tonight?
Well, the nice thing about we got a four-man crew here. We've got two lead brewers, Matt and Alex, and then Brian and I are the assistant brewers. The nice thing about working here is that we really get to do it all. So, you know, typically if you're, just starting in the brewing industry, you got to do canning lines for a really long time, or you're on the production side. But what's nice here is that we get to do kind of, front to back the whole process. We're working with word production, cleaning the tanks, doing deliveries on Friday. It's really nice to be able to kind of have our hands in all different types of pies.
Yeah. Seems like it would reduce the monotony.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because brewing can be pretty monotonous.
Very monotonous. Even having, doing all these different things, it can be monotonous, but it's less monotonous, I would say. Yeah.
So how did you guys get your start in the brewing industry? Was this your first brewing gigs, both of you, or did you both start off other places?
This is actually my second brewing job. I've been a brewer for about 2 years now. I've been with the Free House for about 1 year. I actually was taking a gap year after college, and I was a beer tender in Ames, Iowa, and ended up getting a full-time offer at the brewery there, and decided that this is what I wanted to do. So 2 years later, here I am.
Is that a good way to start getting kind of your foot in the door if brewing is something you want to get into, is to be a beer tender and kind of be around and available when somebody says, hey, I need a hand lifting these 50-pound sacks of grain up on my shoulder and dumping them into the whirlpool? Is it help being that guy?
It definitely helped for me. That's how I got into it. Otherwise, I guess I really don't know how other people will have success in doing that. I know a lot of people go through the courses from the community colleges, and they seem to do pretty well getting incorporated into breweries like that way. So I'd say that's still probably your best bet. I'd say I was just kind of lucky.
I'd say just trying to, get involved in general. There's so many opportunities, not necessarily on the hot side, but, being a brand representative, mm-hmm. Being a BJCP judge is an easy way to just do things on your own time, to be involved with beer. And that's a fun way to just, get involved with, other people who are interested in craft beer.
Yeah.
But it's hard. It's hard to just, get the experience, unless you have, like a degree or something like that. But
yeah, well, we've talked before about being a BJCP judge on the show before. And, even just from a taste perspective and learning more about beer, I can't say enough about, going and learning. And there's a ton of really available resources through BJCP and learning more about beer and learning about flavors and brewing and so much. There's just a whole wealth of resources there at your fingertips, really. If you're interested in learning more about beer and starting brewing and taking kind of your home brewing to the next level, I'm with you. I'd certainly recommend going taking some BJCP judging courses and talking to fellow judges. People are always more than willing to share their wealth and knowledge when it comes to that type of thing.
Yeah, through my experience, if you're trying to get into the craft beer scene, they're just good people. The people are the best part of it, and usually they're interested in the same things that you are, especially in good beer, right?
Yeah. Right.
This seems like it would be a very, very interesting place to work, in the sense that, you Free House and all the Blue Plate restaurants, you've got your flagships, you got your things that are in year-round, but you've got such a broad range of beers outside of those that you do seasonally, that you do for time. Some of them are just one-offs. It seems like from just sort of my perspective of coming here and doing, you know, several shows with you guys, there's a lot of room for experimentation, a lot of room for creativity. Talk about that environment a little bit, you know, as assistant brewers. When you're coming up with, all right, what are we going to brew next? What are we going to have on tap for the upcoming seasons? What's that process like?
Well, we get a lot of free range to kind of do what we want to do here. And one of the things that we really like to focus on is making sure that we can make quality two-style beers. That's really our biggest goal. But yeah, that also allows us to do a lot of experiments when we kind of want to go off the rails, do something crazy. We have the opportunity to do that, and we have... really a team effort of just kind of coming up with an idea, and somebody's like, oh yeah, I like that. Let's see what that turns into. And we have just kind of a constant process of thinking what's the next thing we're going to do.
I like that you guys are all really focused on the team aspect of working as a team of brewers. I'm assuming that, like all teams, you all kind of have your strengths and your weaknesses. Is there one of you that tends to be more creative when it comes to developing beers amongst the team?
I don't know, who's the most creative?
Who's the wild child when it comes to?
I feel like some of us are a little bit more staunch than others with regard to
traditionalists.
You know, I'd say you're not going to see us do like a milkshake IPA here.
No,
like we'll let other breweries do that.
I'll mark the day down on the calendar.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Well, yeah, mark my words. What day is it today? Yeah, mark the time. Well, you've got us on record now,
right?
But I think like we are always looking for the next thing as well. You know, it's exciting to be a part of, you know, essentially the renaissance of craft beer, because it's like, oh, who's going to have the next, you know, thing? So, you know, we're always constantly trying to...
You had the Brute IPA.
Yeah, that was...
I noticed it anywhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was really fun for us, because we're like, well, how, like, specifically on the brewing side, how dry can we make a beer?
Right.
And so that was fun to just kind of talk about, you know, how are we going to brew it? What kind of, you know, flavors, you know, hops would you want to use? So... Yeah,
I was going to ask actually before I get distracted. What are the odds of that coming back anytime soon, and maybe making it like a mini standard, mini flagship? Because that beer, I think that should be on all the time, in my opinion.
All right. I don't know. Sometimes it's kind of like our seasonal beers. It's kind of like how it was received, and I think it was received pretty well. And if there's a demand for it, yeah.
No, I'm seeing it pop up at a lot of, you know, it seems like everybody's got a Brute IPA all of a sudden. So. It's this season's hazy.
Exactly, right? Next one's going to be I don't know.
Crystal Pepsi or the
Coke when everybody decided to do the clear sodas.
Yeah.
You need to do Crystal Beer. That should be the next trend.
There's Crystal Vice, right?
Or just like without malt, no hops, just carbonated water, no alcohol. That's the next beer.
It's Perrier IPA.
Yeah.
So if we can't say who's the most creative, who's the most staunch traditionalist amongst the brew team?
Matt, absolutely. Yeah.
Is it hard to be creative when you have to lobby Matt to go outside
of the
box?
No, not at all. I wouldn't say he's not like we're not doing this. We're not doing that.
Come on.
But
coming from a guy who hates group work in school, I hated it. I was always like, no, guys, you need to listen to my idea. That's why I'm asking, because I hate working like a group.
Last question before, because we got the next course coming out. We're a couple courses into this dinner. I'm really curious to get your guys' opinions on the pairing so far. What did you think of that first course?
Oh, that first course was great.
What did you think it did to the... Because I don't want to say it changed the English brown, but...
As a reminder, it was the Reuben soup with corned beef, sauerkraut, rye croutons, and the English brown, the award-winning English brown.
It definitely brought out some flavors in that English brown that... felt new to me, and I've had that beer a number of times. It's a fantastic, fantastic beer, but it did. It tasted a little different and a little new when pairing it with that Reuben soup.
Yeah, we were talking about how the soup kind of brought out the smokiness of the brown. which was a characteristic that we don't really get too much. But yeah.
No.
I think that might have played off with the definitely the rye croutons in there, and I think that kind of the that great salty seasoning that was in that soup.
Yeah, yeah. The,
I don't want to say it was like
and the saltiness with that corned beef.
Like it wasn't like salty, but it was just like well seasoned, right?
Yeah.
Just what you want out of that soup, and I think that. That moving over into that brown was just like just perfect.
Yeah,
just
fit something real nice to it. All right, we got to go to break. We got the next course coming out. I am eager to try it. We will have more from the Freehouse coming up on the Minnesota Beercast. We'll be right back. Segment of the Minnesota Beercast presented by Freehouse Beer, recorded from the downtown Freehouse Minneapolis at the Fall Flavors Dinner. We just wrapped up the third course. The Bangers and Purple Mash course.
What do you think of that?
Smoked Ukrainian sausage with the Peruvian Purple Mash paired with Oktoberfest. My goodness, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
That was really good.
So when we kind of did the preview in the first segment, I was singing the praises of Kramarchuk's.
Yeah.
And between segments, we did learn that that is where the sausage came from, was Kramarchuk's.
That's
so.
A good decision.
Yeah, if you're going to get some Ukrainian sausage, that's going to be your best bet.
Yeah, that was really good. So we just got the fourth course put down in front of us, the pumpkin cheesecake paired with the barley wine. I'm going to dive into that in just a moment, but we wanted to take a few minutes and talk with Jason, the general manager here at Freehouse. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for stopping by and hanging out with us for a few minutes.
Of course.
So, you guys don't do a ton of beer dinners here, right?
We don't. This is our second since we started.
Okay. I mean, every dinner is a beer dinner if you come and do it right.
True. Very, very, very true. We try to get some beer out there with every meal as much as we can. But this is definitely a focused beer dinner that we are customizing pairings with each meal, each course, done intentionally, so to create a unique experience for.
How long does the planning process typically take for something like this? Like, when did you guys, between the decision to do this, at what point did you really start to sit down with the chefs and the brewers and start thinking about flavors and that collaboration that goes into a menu like this?
We typically start, we look ahead, so we try to plan ahead and look at each quarter of our year and plan accordingly and have something unique for each of those times. So for this dinner, we started probably in around June or July. We started talking about what we wanted to do, looking at production, seeing what we were going to have out during that time. And we wanted, this one was, we wanted to focus on fall flavors. We wanted to capitalize on October time. So the Oktoberfest was kind of the easy one off that we really wanted to show off. And then what we could do around that as well too. And so we started on our initial planning stages, and the mock that we did initially, we were doing kind of more summer flavors, and let's focus on fall. So we had a tasting that we started first round, just scratch with ideas on what we wanted to work with, and then after that we presented it to our culinary team, who made some refinements to it. And then once we had our menu done, we worked with the brewers for pairings, for tastings of what we were going to have.
Okay.
And they got to taste everything, and we came up with the pairings that you all have today. So I think
you really knocked it out of the park, man. I mean, this has been a really fantastic menu. I thought the pairings were creative, were smart. The Reuben soup with the brown ale was just 5 stars.
That's yes. Awesome. Fantastic. Yeah, I'm going to wait till after this segment to dig into the pumpkin, the pumpkin cheesecake. But it's thus far, the brown ale and the Reuben soup has been my favorite.
Oh, that's
yeah,
awesome.
I think so.
I mean, it's hard to not say that the Ukrainian sausage is my favorite, but yeah. I really think that soup just nailed it.
Oh,
absolutely nailed it.
No,
yeah,
great.
I've never had anything quite like that before. I mean, to really put those, you know, get all those flavors of a Reuben, you know, into a nice hearty soup like that. The texture was great. The croutons were perfect. But then, you know, and I've had your brown ale. I said this last segment. I had your brown ale a number of times. It's a, it's a great, great beer in and of itself. But that pairing brought out flavors that I didn't know were there.
That's the exciting thing about when we can pair things like this. And Chef James did a great job with the menu and coming up with some flavors that really work well. And then, you know, it's that's the exciting thing on when we can create a pairing with a beer and a food item that work really, really well. And, you know, our, that's our beer. It's, we want it to pair well with food. We want you to be able to have a couple of them, have a great meal, and go home happy. I mean, that's what it's about. So,
so we often talk with brewers and we often talk with, you know, chefs and those individuals when it comes to beer and food and the culinary experience, but we rarely, if ever, get a chance to talk with somebody like yourself who does, you know, the front of house, oversees the dining experience. What is your approach and what is the challenge involved in making sure that the consumer comes in and has a worthwhile experience when they come to the Free House?
You know, I think every time we want to make sure that we are we're creating that experience. I think that's what it's about. So we want to make sure that our beer selection, that there's something for everyone. I mean, you look at our list. We have our core four beers that there's something for everyone there, and then we have a unique seasonal list that is creative, inspiring, and just something a little bit different. And for our guests, we want to make sure that they can have a meal, have, you know, a couple beers, and enjoy that meal, and go home and not be super full, and being able to not feel like they're in that food coma after they leave here. You know, and it's also making sure, though, that the beer tastes right, it looks right, that we're making sure that the glasses are clean and ready to go. It's all those, the attention to details that we want to make sure that the guest experience, that they, when they come in, that they're not worrying about anything, that we're taking care of all those issues. So
it's unique challenges, though, but that are presented with, you know, having a brew pub type experience.
Yes.
You know, you're not a tap room.
Correct.
You're a restaurant.
Yep.
You know, that also happens to make, you know, wide varieties of really,
yes,
fantastic beers. But with that comes a lot of diversity in your customer base.
Absolutely.
Right? You've got beer geeks that come in. They know what they want. They know what they're looking for. They know what to order. You don't need to really, you know, educate
right,
them,
exactly,
so to speak. But at the same time, you've just got everyday diners that maybe aren't necessarily that into the craft beer scene or community,
correct,
or don't know a lot about it, but they start looking at your menu and they probably have a lot of questions.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about the process of educating your serving staff to be able to answer those questions intelligently, especially with, you know, a selection like you guys have, which is a pretty broad selection.
Absolutely. You know, I think the one thing that we for sure do that we pride ourselves in is that every employee that comes through, whether it's a host, whether it's a busser, whether it's a bartender, a food runner, they all go through a beer classroom within their first month here. It's a roughly about a 3-hour class that our brewers put on, and it goes through production and then tasting and talking through all the beers and how it's made and why it's made the way that it is, and how it pairs, and also how it relates. So people don't always know Free House beer or what our beer is. We number our beers. Not a lot of places do that. They know it by a name, where ours is known by a number. And so we take the time to go over with our staff on what they can relate that to, what that's popular in the market, that they can say, hey, if you like this kind of beer, this will be a something for you to try. This is great.
Is that generally one of the first questions that a server would ask a customer when they don't know what necessarily beer to order? They start asking questions. They don't know what direction to go. Is it, well, what beer do you like?
Yeah, what do you like? What do you normally drink? What types of beer do you like? And then we can hopefully guide them into a special spectrum, because a lot of times it's seasonal, so we can hopefully have something that they can drink or that will be close to that. Otherwise, it might just be something that is within that realm that might be maybe not the exact style, but relatively close. Otherwise, we always have a good selection that might not be on draft anymore in our can selection, that if we didn't have it for them, we could send it home with them, being like, hey, you can try this and take it home with you.
Well, very cool. Well, thanks for stopping by and giving us a few minutes.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for having us out for this dinner. I've already, while you were talking, I think I housed about half of that dessert. My goodness.
Pumpkin cheesecake. Can't go wrong with that.
So delicious.
I'm going to get into mine.
So next segment, we will hopefully be able to spend a few minutes with the chef and talk about his approach to these dishes. You're listening to the Minnesota Beercast, presented by Freehouse Beer.
Stephanie Schimpf from Blue Plate Restaurants is here.
Hey, Rosie.
I don't have to tell you this, but you know, you have one of the best happy hours downtown.
Well, at Mercury Dining Room and Rail, you can come for weekday happy hour.
Again, Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m.
And stay for dinner or another glass of wine.
Yeah, they have steaks and salmon, burgers and sandwiches. Mercury has it all.
There's something for everyone at Mercury Dining Room and Rail at 5th and Marquette in downtown Minneapolis.
Or online at mercurympls.com.
All right, welcome back. Final segment of the Minnesota Beercast, presented by our friends at Freehouse Beer. We are at the Freehouse for their dinner. Just digging into the final course here. This pumpkin cheesecake paired with the barley wine. Man, oh man. Yeah, it's
a rough gig.
It's special. We work really hard.
This is really
for
hard
you
work.
Listeners out there. I hope you guys appreciate the sacrifices we make to bring you this fine program every week.
Speaking of hard work, we are joined by Chef James. Thanks for putting this all together, man.
Yeah, no problem.
You did a great job.
Thank you.
Yeah, you really did. I want to walk through some of these dishes, but let's start with take us back to the beginning when this was all being planned and this was on the books and you knew you were going to do it. What's the first step of putting together a beer dinner like this?
Oh, wow. Okay. The first step is time of year. Think of the time of year, what dishes fit with the right time, because people want to feel what they're eating, you know. So the second process is getting with the brewers, tell them your ideas, and then kind of having them already starting to think about what they're going to have out on their menu that they don't have out yet to pair it with.
I love that answer.
Yeah.
Because beer is seasonal. All beer is seasonal, so I love that right away your answer is, what season is it? Because food is the same way. All food is seasonal, right? I mean, you're not going to have corn on the cob in the middle of January, right? So automatically you go to what time of year is it going to be? What's going to be on the plate in the middle of fall? I think that's a great way to start it. Where do you go from there?
From there, you plan it. So you get with the general manager, get with the front of the house, talk to them, say, hey, what date are you trying to think of to start this, so that I'll have plenty of time to figure it out. So what I do is he tells me a date, and about 2 months beforehand, I make a menu, I bring it to the higher-ups, and they okay it or they nay it. This one, everything they okayed was great.
You got your first menu greenlit.
Yeah, so
that's awesome.
Yeah, so not my first one here, but
okay.
But
first one for this one,
first
this
one
event.
For this event. Yeah, so yeah, everything went really well. Just.
Well, how many of these have you done before? I know this is the second for this location for Freehouse.
Yeah, so, but I've done a few in other restaurants. Done a lot of like really really big ones, but this is the first one that with the brew team where you actually get with them and they come up with like what kind of flavors they're looking for too. You know, so
have you ever
style.
Have you ever run the menu up the flagpole and had the higher up say back to the drawing board on this course or that course?
A few years ago, yeah, when I was still like trying to get better and everything, you know, like
when you were just a young.
When I was young, you know, but I'm almost 31 now. So.
Is that just because they thought maybe a concept wasn't as sound as it could be, or was it that maybe ingredients were out of budget, or what?
No, it's a lot of it was the ideas for like the season and stuff. You know, like I would used to think like, oh, I should make like something with steak, and
I like steak.
Do that during October. Like, you don't do that in October. You do that in December.
Okay. You know? Why would you do that in December instead of October? Because I'm not a chef. I want to learn. This is cool.
So, what happened when I brought that up? I brought it up to my chef. What I wanted to do is a stuffed pork tenderloin at that time, and it was for an October event. And he's like, if you do that, the corporate chefs will murder you.
And I would eat pork in October.
He's like, October. Think Oktoberfest. You know, you gotta think about the beers. You know, the time of season. You know, steaks is more like the fancy, higher priced items you want to make during the holiday season. You know, but not middle of October.
That makes sense.
I'll allow it.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I'll allow it.
See, I'd be a terrible chef.
I wanna talk about this menu specifically though. Let's start with course one. Schmitty and I both agree. I mean, and this is not a knock on any of the other courses. Every course,
this,
I think,
this is our number one.
But man, that Reuben soup, that was really special. That was very nice. What was the thought process behind that? Have you made that before? And will you give me the recipe?
I actually made a similar soup about maybe like 8-9 years ago for a competition, and that was the first time I ever made that type of soup, and I actually won that competition.
I'm not surprised.
But I've just kind of been molding, making it better and better every time I try it. Like before,
where
I didn't have the croutons on it. I didn't
have Reuben soup. Where did that idea come from?
I don't know. I guess I've just worked with a lot of Reubens. I was thinking of something kind of like hearty and like something a little heavier for a first course. I didn't want to do a salad, so it just popped in my head. And it was like, brought it up to my boss. I'm like, hey, what do you think about this? And he said, I think that's perfect. And so I just went with it, and then made it a few times, about a month ago, and then I made it one more time. And the last adjustment that I made was to make the crispy sauerkraut on the top.
I'm really glad I wasn't
didn't have
salad.
That the first time. So, yeah, a month ago I didn't have the crispiness on the top.
That was nice.
I think that added a lot
to the texture.
Yeah.
And the rye croutons, the rye-tons.
Rye-tons, yeah.
Man, that was good. I was amazed that I didn't expect it to taste like a Reuben. I mean, a Reuben is one of those really distinct flavors. You can't mimic that, you know, with anything else. And I did not expect it to be so true to that. And it really was. It was really fantastic.
The hardest part about that soup is getting the sauerkraut flavor so it's not too low where you don't feel it. Because, you know, a lot of sauerkraut will scare people, especially if you say it's in a soup. And too much sauerkraut will scare people, too. So it's just getting that right balance.
Yeah. Nice job. Nice job. The second course, the brew bread bruschetta. Walk us through your thoughts and what went into that.
I wanted to do something with the brewer's bread, you know, because it's kind of like one of the signature things that they have for us in the back. And I just thought, well, I'm going to try different kinds of bruschetta. Mm-hmm. I tried a pesto one. I tried a tomato one. I tried just the cheese one. I didn't like any of them. And then I just like, okay, so figured out what flavors go well together. I'm like, okay, so I'm just going to figure out what cheeses go well with pesto and tomato. And then right before I did the tasting, I added the balsamic glaze on the top, and I was like, that was what was missing.
There you go. Yeah, that bread's got a distinct flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got a very unique flavor. It's got a unique texture, too.
Mm.
Not the type of texture that I would typically associate with a bruschetta.
Yep.
But it all came together really nicely, and I thought the tomatoes, you cooked those just a little bit, right?
Yeah, just a little bit, maybe like 7-8 minutes in the oven.
Yeah.
Normally when I do those type of tomatoes, I can go like 15 minutes so that they actually get kind of soft on the outside and the skin starts to peel off. And it went a lot lighter this time.
Yeah, no, it was a really nice balance because I prefer my tomatoes cooked over raw tomatoes. But you didn't lose a lot of the texture that you would get with the raw tomatoes either.
Yep.
So it was nicely done.
Can you only just briefly walk us through the making of the five cheese pesto cream that you put on there? Because that was really intriguing to me. I tend to shy away from a lot of pestos just because of the pine nuts in there. But if you wouldn't mind, just walk us through really quick that pesto cream that was on there.
There actually are no pine nuts in that pesto.
That's why I liked it.
So what I did is I took a heavy cream. I reduced it about 10%. I added in boars and cheese, goat cheese, parmesan cheese, Swiss cheese, and one other cheese. And after that, I just added the pesto. I roasted off some tomatoes, kind of the same as that what was on the bruschetta on the top, but I roasted them more, almost pureed them, and then that's about it. And
nice
seasonings. I can't tell you.
That's gonna be my go-to pesto from now on. Yeah. Well, you don't want to give away all your secrets. The next one, I think, was definitely the crowd pleaser after course number one, and that was the bangers and purple mash. That was the Ukrainian smoked pork sausage, tri mustard cream, and Peruvian mash, paired with the Oktoberfest. Walk us through the conception and execution of that dish.
Okay, so that one is a little bit more interesting. I was thinking really hard on something really colorful. And I actually had my chef, he was trying to make a cauliflower mash for our last brew dinner. And I thought, I think I can one-up him on this one. So I was just researching purple food, and then I came across this purple Peruvian potato. And I'm like, oh my goodness, that looks so awesome. So I called up my rep, and I said, hey, how can I get this? Because I can't find it anywhere. And he told me, actually, they get it from Peru and California, and then they ship it. It's an 8-day ship. And it's really expensive. It's about $1.10 a pound to get it. But I got it in. I asked my chef, I'm like, hey, can I roll with this? He said, yeah. So I tried it out, and it turned out great. The flavor was great. And so same thing for, like, just thinking seasonal for that dish, you know, like bangers and mash. Like,
how would you describe the purple Peruvian potatoes? What, in your opinion, sets them apart and makes them unique from the typical potatoes that we would normally get in a restaurant?
So I would compare them to an Idaho potato. It's an Idaho style potato, actually. Very similar in flavor, a little more sweetness. And they're also a little bit harder to work with. The cook time on them is about twice as fast, and they're easy to break down. So if you overcook them just a couple minutes, they'll break down and you'll turn into mush.
Okay.
Flavor will still stay the same, you know. But also, you got to be careful of the starches with that one. Like, most mashed potatoes, you want to peel them and soak them anyway to release the starch so they don't get starchy. This one, you absolutely want to do it for certain.
And I thought the texture was a little unique, a little different than I expected.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. And finally, the course that I'm still picking at and enjoying here, your final course, your pumpkin cheesecake, brown sugar graham crust. You got your brown ale infused into the caramel there, paired with a barley wine. This is just absolutely delicious. It's so good.
Yeah, buddy. I'm eating it in between complimenting all the other dishes.
This one made me the most nervous, actually. It's been a few years since I've made a cheesecake, actually. And I made it last night, and I made 4 total cheesecakes, and boy, am I glad I did that, because I took one out of the oven, and one of the cooks walks by, and he touches it a little too hard, and just, like, made it collapse a little bit and crumble. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Guess who's washing, like, dishes tonight?
Yep. I'm like, you're closing tonight for sure. But luckily, I made the extra one, so it wasn't an issue, but with caramel sauce, got to use the number 3 brown ale to reduce it down to about 3 quarts of it, to reduce it down to just sticking to the bottom of the pan, and I just made my own caramel sauce on top of that. Pumpkin cheesecake explains itself. The whipped cream,
it's
actually
a perfect pairing with the barley wine, too.
Yeah.
The barley wine kind of cuts through.
High alcohol, a lot of molasses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good for it.
Yeah, excellent job. So thank you so much for giving us a few minutes tonight.
Yeah,
we really appreciate
absolutely.
It. And excellent job on the entire meal. Just fantastic.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, phenomenal, James. Thank you so much. Thanks to Freehouse.
Yeah, thanks to Freehouse for having us out here. Thanks to Freehouse for sponsoring the program each and every week. Make sure you stop by any of the awesome Blue Plate restaurants and thank them for sponsoring the Minnesota Beer Cast. We will be back with a brand new episode next week.
We'll see you then.
Cheers.
I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow.